This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, Episode 17. Dr. Rob Zadiska, you and I are joined virtually again, this time via Skype, as it's been kind of the normal way of doing this podcast as of late. But after the performance against Minnesota, you have cracked open a beer as we are recording this on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock p.m., and you've probably been drinking since that game ended, I suppose.
You know what? I kind of drank during the game, and then you know what? I kind of got depressed by everything. I even stopped drinking about the third quarter just because I realized it wasn't helping anything.
So what beer did you pull out this afternoon? I can tell you what I went and got. I am drinking a Nebraska Brewing Company, a brunette, which is a nut brown ale. And just to let you know, I met Steve Swanstrom in a parking lot the other day. Actually, we had lunch at the Corner Kick Cafe out there in Millard, but it was kind of like this. We had the street tacos, but it was like I pulled up to his little SUV. We open up the back doors, and we're like shuffling New Glarus into the back seat. So I've got some Spotted Cow. And I've got this fat squirrel that I tried yesterday that was really good, too. But I had one of those, but I'm saving that for when you can actually come back to the house and, like, have a proper recording.
Nice. I love it.
So what are you drinking today, then?
You know, have you ever – so you go to Costco. Have you seen the beer advent calendar?
Yes.
At Costco?
Yes.
So my mother-in-law gets that for me for my it's like for Christmas gift every year. I guess it's probably more of a birthday gift since my birthday is early December. So
did I miss your birthday?
You kind of did. I mean, you August people always forget about us December people.
Well, first of all, I'm September, so get it right.
August, September.
But you're not you're not in the club yet, though. You're not in the 50 club yet with me.
5-0. No. I'm one shy of that. So I turned the big 4-9. So.
All right.
But yeah, so she got me that for my birthday. So I kind of try and stick with the whole every day. Although, because of COVID, we didn't see each other for about the first 2 weeks of December. So I had a little makeup work to do yesterday. So I ripped through about 1 week's worth yesterday during the first half and then kind of shut it down. But I just grabbed another one out of there. It's a Vienna style lager. So it's all these different German beers and this one is from Landium Brewery in Germany. So, but they're all pretty good. I mean, it's kind of all import German beer and they're all a little different. So that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. So I guess I should just say go, right? Because I look like an idiot. I'm actually doing the Iowa Call-In Show last night and people were actually tweeting at me going, boy, you blew. I listened to your other podcast and you blew that one because I did not see in any way, Nebraska losing to Minnesota. I watched the way other teams had dismantled Minnesota. And then come to find out Minnesota's missing like 33 players. You know, they haven't really practiced that much. They haven't had that much preparation. And then they go out and beat Nebraska.
They haven't played in 3 weeks.
Yeah, and this made like zero sense whatsoever. So I looked like an idiot, but I'm just going to let you hold court here as we continue
Who said they were worried about Nebraska in this game? I mean, I think during our podcast, the last podcast, I specifically made the point, we were a 14-point, 15-point favorite against Illinois, and you saw what happened in that game. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason to how things are going for Nebraska this year. But I was awfully concerned about this because when I look at Minnesota, there's still things Nebraska does not deal with very well. And that's power running teams, teams that can control the clock, teams that have a solid running game. And even as bad as Minnesota is, Nebraska still has issues with teams that run the ball fairly well. And Minnesota's still running the ball fairly well. Mo, is it Ibrahim?
Yep.
Ibrahim? I'm just calling him Mo for the rest of the
podcast. That's fine.
But
you just call him Mo.
He had, what was it? I think it was his seventh or eighth straight 100-yard game. I think it was his seventh straight 100-yard game. And Minnesota still, I mean, they're doing what they've done the last few years. They just kind of try and lean on you, run downhill, hand the ball off to the running back, every so often make some opportunistic passes, and just grind on you. They did a great job of it last year. Nebraska, last year they just pounded us. This year they kind of did sort of the kind of the abridged version of that. It wasn't as bad. But when you look at what Minnesota did, they essentially controlled the clock, kept the ball out of Nebraska's hands, stayed a little opportunistic with their passing game, and then took advantage of Nebraska's mistakes, and they won. And that's the kind of thing I'm worried about. In honestly, pretty much any game, it doesn't matter how bad the opponent is. Nebraska does an outstanding job of playing down to the opponents, and Nebraska still has these very well-defined weaknesses on defense, which is, you know, if you can have a team that can control the clock, keep the ball keep the clock running and move the ball with the running game, Nebraska's going to have trouble dealing with that. They did again yesterday.
It just seems like, you know, with Nebraska, as you watch this team, it literally is like one step forward, three steps back. Right? There is no consistency whatsoever. And to be honest, Rob, there hasn't been in the three full seasons that Scott Frost has been the head coach. No consistency.
You know, that first season, I saw, from a productivity standpoint, I saw some consistency on offense. But it kind of goes back to something we've kind of, I mean, from a beating a dead horse standpoint, he kind of had, while not a lot of depth, he kind of had the key pieces that any offense needs. He had a deep threat wide receiver. He had a solid every down running back. He kind of had the mid-range game with guys like Mo Washington and J.D. Spielman that first year. They're kind of the third down running back, the slot receiver type guys. He had all of those pieces to the offense. And he hasn't had that since that first year. Now, huge number of mistakes, defense trying to figure out which foot is the right foot, left foot. That first year kind of doomed that season. We're also still seeing all of those same mistakes again. And so that's, again, where I think a lot of that comes from. I see blocking scheme errors up front. I'm seeing, you know, some weaknesses. Minnesota's left defensive end just kind of basically owned Ben Hart during the game. And I get it. Ben Hart's a redshirt freshman offensive tackle. But at some point, somebody's got to drop an anchor and stop an opponent. And when you're a 6'9", 330-pound offensive tackle, at some point you might want to stop that defensive end, because it wasn't like he was getting destroyed on speed rushes by a speed guy. He was getting bull rushed most of the time and couldn't stop it. And that's a problem for a guy of that size.
Do you believe Scott Frost's excuse that the offense couldn't get into a rhythm because of TV timeouts?
That might have been the biggest bullshit thing I've heard, not since the clap gate week in the Iowa game week and a half, couple of weeks ago. So here's the deal. When you're a football coach, when you're a football team, there's certain things that are always going to be present that are part of the game no matter what. And TV timeouts are one of them. Accessory noise is one of the things you have to deal with. You're going to hear, I mean, I guarantee you, every football game I ever played in, somebody somewhere up in the stands has a damn whistle. It's you're hearing whistles during plays. You're hearing clapping all over the place. You've got to deal with that. It's not like TV timeouts are a new thing within the last year or so. That's something you've got to deal with. And if your excuse is that your offense doesn't work because TV timeouts are throwing your rhythm off, you've got a lot of problems with your offense then. And I mean, you can make the mistakes about the bad calls during the game. I will admit the holding call against Ethan Piper, which, let me be very, very clear here on a few points. One, that was not a hold. Now, I'm not saying it's like, well, it was a hold, but they shouldn't have called it, because those do exist. There's holding calls that shouldn't be called. This wasn't one of those. That was just flat out not a hold. And it was a really, really bad call by the officials, or whichever official called it. Horrible, horrible call. Not that that's surprising with the caliber of officiating that happens in the Big Ten, because it's a pretty weak conference when it comes to the officials. And I don't think the conference holds any of these guys accountable on a weekend or week out basis. And I don't mean just Nebraska games. You go watch any Big Ten game, it's some of the weakest officiating you'll see nationwide from any major conference. And that was an absolute bullshit fucking call that never should have been made, because it wasn't holding at all. And it did erase a touchdown. Nebraska ended up getting a field goal. And that, I'm not going to say that cost Nebraska the game, because it was shitty football that cost Nebraska the game. But it doesn't excuse the fact that it was a crap call regardless. So But my point is, all of these things are part of a game. You've got to be able to overcome some crap calls by the officials. You got to be able to overcome some legit penalties that you did make. That's going to happen every so often. There is going to be even great teams periodically turn the ball over. Bad teams do it a lot. We had a couple on Saturday. You've got to be able to overcome these things. You've got to be able to overcome something as freaking mundane as a goddamn TV timeout. Like, you're pinning your loss on that. You've got to overcome that stuff. And if you're using those things as excuses, that's a hell of a weak excuse.
The interesting part is, and I don't mean to compare, because this is a typical thing to do to go back in time, I never remember Tom Osborne giving an excuse. And Mark writes in, he says, seems like every loss, which is 20 now under Frost, it's the same excuses game after game. Seemed like the coaches would be the blame, as nothing has changed. So hard to watch.
Well, and I think a lot of that goes back to the fact that there's some problems, in my opinion, with the system. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about from an offensive system standpoint. I think sometimes coaches try to hang their hat on their system too much. We're going to try to win the game with an offense or a style of offense that other teams just don't have an answer for. And when you do that, you end up moving away from some very fundamental aspects of the sport that you probably need to follow in order to win football games. Now, every so often you'll stumble upon maybe kind of some nuanced aspect that's novel that people haven't quite figured out yet. People won some football games with the Wildcat offense for a while. People won football games with the run and shoot offense for a while. People won football games with, oh my gosh, who was the coach down at Houston back in the day? Andre Ware.
Well, the old run and shoot, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically the run and shoot.
Yeah.
It was a variation of the run and shoot. I mean, it wasn't the Mouse Davis version, but it was a variation on it. But, I mean, these are things that they might – maybe they kind of work for a while, or maybe they'll work within sort of a niche situation, such as, hey, maybe this would work really, really well within the styles used within the Sun Belt or the AAC. But even then, after a while, people kind of figure shit out, and they figure out how to stop stuff. I'd be curious to see how Frost's offense long term would have held up even in within the AAC. Would he still continue to churn out 11, 12, 13 win seasons year in and year out down there with his current style? And I say that because I'm not seeing improvement within these fundamental aspects of the game. Nebraska's not doesn't have a strong, consistent run game. Show me a team that has consistent long-term success and doesn't have a good, fundamentally sound running game. It's going to be really hard for anybody to do that. I mean, you look at NFL teams, the really good NFL teams have a pretty good running game. They all do. You look at the really good college football teams. Guess who runs the ball really well? Clemson and Alabama. I mean, it's just these are things that are hard to dispute. You look at the Big Ten. Who has consistently good running games? I mean, in the West, the good Wisconsin teams, the good Iowa teams. When Northwestern has good seasons, they've got a really good running game going on offense. Ohio State always runs the ball really, really well. They've got great O-line play. They've got a, I mean, it's almost mundane for Ohio State anymore. You almost lose track of the good running backs coming out of Ohio State because every year they're putting one or two guys into the NFL out of that run offense. You don't think about it anymore because those teams have made it so mundanely normal.
It's interesting that you say this because a couple things. I was just in my office, and your neighbor Mark Berner was there. You know Mark, right?
Yep.
So he just asked me. He goes, "Hey, I just don't get it. I don't get why Nebraska goes more east and west and not more north and south." And I said, "Not only that, I go
east west." I mean, you look at that, the very first play of the game, pass to the flat. I'm like, are you – and they didn't – I mean, it was a lateral pass. He doesn't catch it. It bounces backwards, and it's a 9-yard loss. First play, I watched that, and all I could think was, okay, well, this shit looks just like the goddamn Illinois game. I mean, it's – you got to be kidding me. I mean, it's like that. That's how you're starting out of the gate? Yeah, I mean, it's – I don't get it. Mark hits the nail on the head right there. It's why bother moving laterally? And Dirk Chatterland in the World Herald he kind of went off and he had a couple of good points, but one of the points he made was it's very easy to look at Martinez's numbers the last few weeks because you look at even the Illinois game, but you look at the Iowa game, you look at the Purdue game, and you look at the game yesterday, and Martinez's stat line is pretty darn good.
Yeah, but he missed some. He missed some wide open guys, though, dude.
He did, and he missed some. He threw to some receivers that were covered when other guys were blazingly wide open. But the thing is you look at his completion percentage, and it's sparkling. But he's also not. He's also at what are they averaging? I think it's something like somewhere between like 4 and 6 yards a pass the last 3 weeks. I mean, their pass yardage per play is what most teams are looking at for a run average. And that is not the way that should be. I mean, they're throwing these little dink and dump passes every single time and leaving guys wide open. And it's a huge step back for this offense, the fact that they're doing this and that they have absolutely zero vertical pass game. And other teams – and it's been this way for 2 years. And other teams know this. They know you're not going to burn them long. I mean, maybe to the once in a while they'll go a little bit deeper to one of the tight ends. But, I mean, there's absolutely zero vertical pass game, and it's killing us.
So, another thing that's going to come back to haunt Scott Frost, and because words are always used against you, right? If you put out a tweet, somebody will go back and find it. But your words are always used against you because I was just doing Look at me get something stuck in my throat. You know, I'm looking this book at, on persuasion, right? And when you state something publicly, people hold you to that. They believe in it. And it also puts you out there. When he publicly said, listen, the Big Ten's going to have to adjust to his offense, not the other way around, people are thinking, man, Nebraska can put up 450, 500 yards a game. They're going to score 45, 50 points a game. Nebraska with 308 total yards yesterday, 197 rushing, which isn't bad, but just held the ball for 24 minutes and 12 seconds. They were 4 of 13 on third down. This offense has not been a killer offense by any means, Rob, and really I haven't seen glimpses of what he was talking about when he was hired.
No, and it's just because I think it was a bit of a novel offense. The blocking scheme, which until you get a year or two's worth of that scheme under your belt to actually watch it, it's hard to really analyze it, in my opinion. And the way they do it, I call it seam blocking or shield blocking. And it's not designed to create vertical drive. It's designed to create seams within the defense. The problem is if you have even a single breakdown anywhere in that blocking scheme, whether it's a tight end, wide receiver, one of the linemen, if there's a breakdown anywhere, the play's dead. The running back has one little seam that they have, one little lane that's supposed to be open. And if there's a breakdown, that seam's not going to be there and the play's dead. Now, you mentioned they ran the ball well. You look at the total yardage. How they used their running game, in my opinion, was fairly faulty because while they did have a fair amount of yardage, I mean, keep in mind a big chunk of that came on one run for Wanda. Basically 25% of that yardage total came on one play.
So looks are deceiving.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
a little deceiving in my book, and about another 10% of it came on two runs by Martinez. So basically three plays are giving you 45, 50% of that yardage total right there. That's really deceptive. So when you look at that, not as impressive as the number would originally seem. Now, you also got to look at how they're using that running game. You look at Minnesota, you look at Iowa, you look at Northwestern, you look at Wisconsin when Wisconsin's having a Wisconsin-like year. They're using that running game to wear down opponents. Basically, it's like a boxer throwing body punches. And that's not what you saw on Saturday. You saw it from Minnesota. Look at the time of possession. It was basically a 36-24 minute time of possession advantage for Minnesota. That's an ass kicking right there. When you see a time of possession that is more than 10 minutes in favor of one team, that's an ass kicking, because unless you're scoring every time you touch the ball, which I think Frost's offense was supposed to be designed to do, that time of possession becomes huge.
Yeah.
If Nebraska's not scoring every drive and you don't have that time of possession advantage, you're screwed, dude. And that's just a fact. That's fundamental football right there. You either need to score every time or you need to control the clock. And Nebraska didn't do either. And the end result is you lose football games when that happens. Minnesota did a great job of controlling the clock. They did a good job on a number of drives of keeping Nebraska out of the end zone or just keeping them from scoring. And, I mean, these are just – God, it's just – I don't know how to put this any more simplistically. It's just that's facts of fundamental football right there. Nebraska needs to figure out how to use the run game to control the clock. And I don't know if it's the fact that Lubick and Frost, do they just not have the patience to do this? Is it not? Is it something that escapes their fundamental understanding? I don't know, but I mean, there's so many fundamental things here that seem basically kind of out of whack in terms of how you ought to coach football games and how your system ought to work. Because right now, it's kind of like they're trying to do video game sandlot football, like they're trying to throw haymaker punches here on every single play, and it's getting them in trouble. The taking a shot on second down when it's second and two, you know what? I hate that. It's get the first down, and then you can kind of play around with a whole new set of downs again.
The amazing thing
–
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the amazing thing about this last game is that we've had the doctalksports@gmail.com email address out there all season long, and we'd get emails sporadically, you know, a couple here and there. The email inbox lit up after the game yesterday without even soliciting emails. I mean, people just knew, okay, I'm going to the doctor. I finally, it's like putting off an illness for as long as you can, and they were like,
well, should we answer some?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get to. It's like, fuck it, we're going to the doctor now. I have nowhere else to turn. I'm going to go to the doctor. That's what a lot of people did yesterday. Like Dan from Ackworth, Georgia. He says, "How long?" My question to you is, how long does it take for a strength and conditioning program to show results?
I'd say 3 years. And actually, there's kind of a few places I'm seeing it already. So I think it's there. I just don't think they're using it effectively. Like I said, on the offensive line, I'm seeing it, but the blocking scheme they're using, it's not designed for big, strong power guys. I mean, I want to see them lining up and doing vertical drive blocking, and that's not what these guys are doing. I am seeing it to a degree on the defensive side of the ball. When you look at a Casey Rogers, a Ty Robinson, I'm seeing guys that are better able to hang in there with these big linemen. It's just the offense isn't doing those guys any favors. I think Nebraska's also a little – I still think you need a fourth D lineman in there. I'm still just – I never will be sold on the 3-4. I want to see four down linemen in there because in a conference where teams who are going to try to beat you – with a strong running game and controlling the clock, you need big bodies in there, and a fourth big body is better than three big bodies. So, but I think it's there. I just don't think Nebraska's using it the way they ought to be. I mean, basically, it's like taking a pool cue and a baseball bat to a fight. You're gonna try and tap guys with the pool cue as opposed to slugging them with the baseball bat.
Mike says, hey, can you tell me why, over the course of the last couple games, Nebraska's barely had Luke McCaffrey on the field, and he doesn't mean as a quarterback, but just a weapon defenses need to worry about, like in the Ohio State game. His speed could have made a huge difference against the boat rowers like Robinson. And how bad of a play caller is Lubick?
I am convinced Lubick's a horrible play caller. I'm not sure what the hell happened at Oregon that made that work, unless it was just a spectacular collection of athletes, or maybe it was the bright colors. Or the other thing you got to keep in mind, Oregon was playing Pac-12 football against a bunch of Pac-12 defenses. It's kind of like the Big 12. It's sort of one of those, it's like NBA basketball on a football field. You know, we're going to score 40, 50 points, and do we even have a defensive coordinator? I mean, that's kind of the logic in those conferences. I think they looked a hell of a lot better because they spent most of the year putting up huge points against a bunch of weak Pac-12 defenses, which is also why whenever Oregon would get to the college football playoff, you'd start to see him flounder a bit. I think they're doing a very poor job of play calling. And again, that gets back to the fundamental understanding of what works well in football 99% of the time. There's my answer. I don't think they're doing a very good job play calling.
Janet writes in and says, actually, Roger uses his wife's, this is funny, because it comes across as Janet, then it's signed Roger, so Roger uses the wife's email account. He's a lot more daring than most guys, right? I mean, most guys, they're not sharing the email account with a wife. No way. No way at all. He wrote out a bunch of questions. I'll get to some that haven't been answered yet. His first one is, are these coaches able to motivate players during the game?
Yeah, you know, I think they are. I mean, I don't think player motivation during a game is an issue. I do think there's I still think there's a problem on this team in terms of having kind of the hardcore lunch pail guys. I want to see guys who are there not because they're a four-star athlete. They're there because they want to absolutely kill the guy across from them. And I'm not sure I'm seeing that quite yet, but I don't know if they're trying to motivate guys in that sense either. It's again, I'm giving sort of a two-part answer to a one-part question. I think the in-game motivation's fine. I just think what they're trying to motivate guys to do isn't quite what it should be. Like I said, some of that even goes back to the play calling. I think the players are hamstrung by the system they're currently in right now.
So Gary writes in from Guam. That's impressive, right? We have listeners in Guam. And by the way, did you know we were like the top-rated college football podcast in Cyprus? That's no shit, man. I get these stats. I'm like, what? Who's listening to us in Cyprus, right? It's one of those. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. And I'm just going to kind of paraphrase what Gary said. But, you know, when you go into the facilities, they seem to have, like, banners and motivational stuff all over the place. He wants to know if you should take, like, all the banners down. Like, just say, screw it. There's like, it's like twofold. You use that as motivation, as something to live up to, but I get it. It's like, if you can't live up to your end of the bargain, how do you motivate somebody? I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. Go ahead.
Again, I don't know if it's a motivation thing is the problem. I don't think that's the issue. I think the fundamental understanding of what they're trying to do is flawed. I think in football, you need to establish a good, strong running game. Again, this is junior high level stuff. I remember in coaching seventh grade, and our running back, he was the kid, he's now Omaha Westside's starting running back, and whenever Stu can get the all-state teams out, he's going to be, should be one of the first team all-state running backs. He was our seventh grade running back. Our head coach, who, by the way, happened to be this kid's dad, wanted to light it up with a pass game week in, week out. And myself, who's the O-line coach, and the O-coordinator, and all the other coaches are yelling at him, you've got a future all-stater at running back, and he's your kid. Just give him the ball. Run it down their throats. Because we also had a bunch of really good O-linemen, too. This is junior high-level stuff, but it works at all levels. Good NFL teams run the ball. The New York Giants, who suck, they're basically going to end up being 4-2 over the last 6 weeks because they played halfway solid defense and with Gallman have a pretty good running game all of a sudden. This is idiotic. It's so basic. Run the damn ball. Establish a running game. Control the clock. If you can do those things, you're going to do pretty well. You've got Minnesota, who's given up nearly 7 yards a play on defense this year. All you got to do is get 3 or 4 yards a pop. You're going to kill them. Just do that for the whole day, and you're going to win the damn football game. And Nebraska's looking at these idiotically simplistic facts and going, nah, we're going to put the ball in the air for 3 yards, or on first play of the game, minus 9 yards. Yeah, we're going to throw the ball for an average of 3 to 4 yards per play and lose the damn game. It makes zero sense to me. I'm running out of answers. I'm just pointing out problems at this point. I don't have an answer for what the why of this. But the problem is insanely obvious to me.
So Bill Moose made the proclamation earlier in the week that as long as he's...
I thought you were going to say Bill Moose had a question.
No, made the proclamation that Scott Frost will be the head coach as long as he's the athletic director. That's fine. You can make that proclamation because nobody...
Does Bill know something we don't know?
Well, at the end of the day, he can leave whenever he wants, right? I mean, he's got his little ranch up there in the Pacific Northwest. But do you sit down and say, okay, listen, I know you probably don't want to, but you're going to have to make some changes because it's not getting better. And do you think Scott Frost, when the season is over, because it just got announced that Nebraska is going to play at Rutgers on Friday. We'll get into that in a little bit. But do you think at the end of the season he makes any changes whatsoever to his assistant coaching staff?
I could see it happening because he's made changes before. I mean, it's not like there haven't been changes within that coaching staff. You've seen an old coordinator gone. You've seen a couple of other position coaches leave. I say leave, I think it was kind of a very quiet, hey, we're going to have you leave because you have to. They got told they had to leave. So I think the one you're referring to is Chenander.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, is the defense that bad, or is this when you're on the field that long? As you were mentioning, is the offense not helping the defense out, is it not getting better?
Yeah, I mean, there's things I still have. Like I said, I still have an issue with a number of things Chenander does. I mean, if you're going to ask me over the last, well, this year at least, do I think the bigger issue is offense or defense? I'd probably say it's offense.
I would agree with you there. There is no offense.
But I mean, if Frost is the head coach and this is his system, how do you fire that?
It's hard to. It's funny that you say that, Rob, because I watched the game yesterday. I was getting ready for the Iowa-Wisconsin game, and I was watching that game, and I just sat there and watched. They don't have personnel on offense whatsoever. It's not there.
Well, and it's, you know, let's go back a little bit. I mean, there's things they can do. I think they've got a group of tight ends that are actually pretty good.
Okay, are you going to win with tight ends?
Iowa did.
Yeah, but they also had
a running game.
Yes.
From a personnel standpoint, again, the personnel's not perfect. I'd be the first to tell you we don't have a great every down running back. Mills, when he's healthy, is, in my opinion, on a Power 5 conference level, he's a good middle of the road every down running back. He's not great. He's not horrible. Quite frankly, I think he's probably a little bit better than average. I will say that. He always breaks that first tackle. He tends to fall forward. He gets a yard or two more than I think he's going to. But he's not great. Again, I'd like to see them running on first down and second down. I'd like to see the fucking swing pass completely eliminated from the goddamn offense.
That's like the fourth GD you've dropped. You are fired up.
I'm pissed about this lack of a vertical passing game. Figure out a way to get the ball downfield. Find somebody on the team to throw the ball to. Figure out a way to get guys open. I mean, how many times did Minnesota run a passing play into a zone coverage and the guy's open? I mean, we made tackle after tackle. I mean, they limited the number of yards guys got after the catch. But when you're making those catches 12, 15 yards downfield every damn time, seriously, you can't figure out how to do that? You can't find somebody to run a deep pattern? I mean, there's guys on the team who can catch the ball. Throw it to them. I mean, you can't tell me they're not there. I mean, for Pete's sakes, I mean, make Austin Allen into a damn tight end or into a wide receiver. Where's Chris Hickman? Teach Betts one pass route to run and get him to run it well and give him the ball and throw the ball to him. Who cares if the opponent knows he's the target? But figure it out. I mean, at some point, Wandale can't be the only guy you give the ball to. You've got to be able to figure out how to get that vertical passing game going. And it drives me nuts that we've got this passing game where, okay, great, the completion percentage is freaking sterling, but we're averaging four yards per catch. I mean, that's not helping you any. That's what your 4 yards per play is what your running game is there for. And when you're using your passing game to accomplish that, just run the damn ball if that's what you want and wear the defense out. Again, there's this fundamental aspect, establish a running game. Force the team to have to adjust to you running the ball. When they adjust to you running the ball, throw play action pass at them. Throw a bootleg at them. Throw a screen at them. It opens up a lot of things on offense because I get you've got this insane system you brought up from Central Florida that's an offshoot of what you ran at Oregon. But guess what? This isn't Pac-12 defenses anymore. Big Ten defenses beat those defenses in the playoffs. SEC defenses beat those teams in the playoffs. It's not the AAC anymore. It's not. This isn't Memphis that we're trying to compete against. It's Ohio State and Iowa and Minnesota that we're trying to compete against anymore. And so these... I mean, you go to the AAC, they're both going to put the ball up in the air on first down and try and hit you with this style between teams. This is not the AAC. You're going to have to adapt. It's just not going to work that way.
Nebraska gets one more shot at a win. They was just announced this afternoon, we're recording on Sunday the 13th, that they will travel to Rutgers for that crossover game. Rutgers is improved under Greg Schiano, 3 wins on the season. They're coming off a win against Maryland. To me, who has more to play for here, Nebraska or Rutgers? Because Greg Schiano, I could see using a win over Nebraska as just a catapult into the recruiting season and what he's trying to accomplish there. And Nebraska needs a win more than anything to build some confidence heading into its recruiting season, and hopefully they don't have any defections. So who has more to play for in a Rutgers-Nebraska game?
I actually think Rutgers does. I mean, I have trouble thinking that the Nebraska players, boy, you know what, kind of the thought just crossed my mind, the motivation question all of a sudden. Yep. You get to this point. This is a team that's now guaranteed, what is it, their 4th or 5th straight losing season. I think Rutgers is in a position where they're going to feel like they've got more to play for. This is going to be a tough motivation for Nebraska. I mean, I'd love to see the win because you go out there and you're playing for a win no matter what every time. But I look at what Shiano's a really good coach. I don't think his system translated well to the NFL. And it just doesn't. So some guys are college guys. Some guys are NFL guys. It's enough of a different game that a lot of things just don't cross over. And so I'm not sure I fault Shiano for that. When I look at him, I see a guy who is a really, really good defensive coach. I see a guy who I think is fairly proven as a head coach. And I see a guy who is also a really good fit, and that counts for something. He's a good fit at Rutgers. Rich Rodriguez, great fit at West Virginia, should never have left. I think Shiano's sitting here going like, thank God I'm back at Rutgers. I probably should not have left. But I think he learned something. He's going to be an even better coach for having done that. But I think Shiano and Rutgers have far more to play for than Nebraska does. This is going to be a tough out for Nebraska. Don't give me any crap about how Rutgers isn't that good of a team. Well, guess what? Minnesota wasn't that good of a team. Illinois was not that good of a team.
No. Well, let's go into Illinois. Illinois just fired Lovey Smith. So Lovey Smith has been fired by Illinois after five seasons. Surprised by that?
I'm surprised it took this long. I say that. I actually really like Lovey Smith. Do you know where I think Lovey Smith would be a really good coach at?
Where?
The NFL. He's an NFL guy. That shit doesn't translate to college football.
But he beat Nebraska.
Well, he did. And he won some games here and there. And they did some good things on defense the last couple of years. He's just not a college football coach. He's an NFL guy. He always has been. It just that stuff doesn't translate really well. I think Lovey Smith will go on. You know, if he wants to keep coaching, that gray beard it kind of throws me off. He may not actually be that old. I do not know how old Lovey Smith is. But, if he feels like he's still got some years under him, under his belt, I think he goes back and becomes a D-line or a linebackers coach in the NFL. If somebody needs a solid D-coordinator, I think he goes and becomes a D-coordinator in the NFL. And I think he does really well. If the head job opens up, I think he'd be a solid NFL head coach. He was a damn good head coach in the NFL with the Bears. I think people forget about the fact but that's the best stretch the Bears have had since Ditka.
Lovey's 62. He went 17-39 overall, 10-33 in the Big 12 or Big 10 rather in five seasons. Not great. You're right.
No, it's not. But yeah, look at what he did in Chicago. I think he was an outstanding head coach in the NFL. He's an NFL guy. Go back to the NFL. And go be an NFL coach again, and I think he'll kick ass. He was with the Bears for, 10, 11 seasons? It was a long time. By NFL standards, he was with the Bears for an awfully long time.
So, I don't know if you've heard this one yet. Auburn just fired Gus Malzahn. That after eight seasons and a 6-4 record this past year where they just beat Mississippi State 24-10 on Saturday.
And that was one of those things. I thought he actually did really well at Auburn. And I even give Frost a little bit of a pass on this. The whole 2020 season thing, I think you can kind of half throw it out because of the way things shook out with COVID. So I give that 6-4 record a little bit of a pass. I don't know what the problem was, but I think from day one, Malzahn and the Auburn brass just didn't – something there just didn't jive. Literally every other year, he would beat Alabama and save his job. And normally you beat Alabama every other year when you're the Auburn coach, and that elevates you to sainthood within the eyes of that school. And for some reason with Malzahn, it just didn't.
So I never
understood why they hated his ass down there so much. But I thought he actually did really well there.
He went 68-34. Now his postseason record has been bad since 2014, 2-5, which is the worst postseason win percentage among SEC West teams since 2014. Now, Rob, are you ready for this? These universities can't claim, and I know money comes from boosters, but it's hard to claim COVID poverty here. He's owed $21.7 million, 50% of that, which is due in the first 30 days.
Wow. See, I look at this and it makes me think, it's like, what the hell was I thinking going to medical school? I should have been a football coach.
Well, so you have Lovie Smith who got fired. You have Gus Malzahn who got fired. And then Mike Tomlin, Mike Tomlin. Why did the Steelers pop into my head? Kevin Sumlin at Arizona got fired yesterday, and for good reason. You don't lose to your rival 70-3.
No, and I saw that. I saw the Sumlin firing. Sumlin's problem is that he played with that whole University of Houston curse. I mean, he did it. Charlie Strong did it. Tom Herman did it. You mess with that one, you're going down afterwards. I mean, it just, you're not escaping that one.
You mentioned the Houston curse. Tom Herman, it was announced by Texas, will be coming back as the head coach as the Longhorns. Does that one surprise you?
I am shocked. Just because there's been so much smoke there on that one. That's the one that I thought was going to be a sure thing. But that's also one of those deals where you see that and he either A, loses to Oklahoma, or B, has one of these subpar mediocre years next year. They're going to get 2/3 of the way through the season and he gets fired. I just think there's too much smoke there surrounding him, because that's one of those blue blood programs that, I mean, that like typifies blue blood. I mean, you look up blue blood in the dictionary and it's like Texas. I mean, like they were that verbiage with that badge of honor for Texas. They want to be referred to as a blue blood. And if they're not winning games and they're not able to back up that arrogance, they're not happy. I'm shocked about that one, that they announced that. That was the one that I thought was going to be a sure thing.
So, well, and that kind of leaves Urban Meyer in question, right? Because the big rumor was Urban Meyer's either going to USC or he's going to go to Texas. Well, USC's unbeaten, and USC's playoff chances are starting to increase if you look at the analytics of it. And now that Texas has said Tom Herman's coming back, there's really no place for Urban Meyer to land anywhere if that's what he chooses to do. Now, the next big move probably will be at Michigan, where the athletic director there has said that he's going to talk to Jim Harbaugh after the season. Michigan now will travel to Iowa City to play Iowa on Saturday in that crossover game. So Jim,
I think that's going to be an ugly game. I think Iowa's just going to sit there and grind them down, and basically it's going to be like yesterday all over again, except I think they score two more touchdowns than they did against Wisconsin. And you're going to see a 42-7 kind of game.
You know, it's weird, Rob, because you talk about time of possession yesterday. Wisconsin had the ball 11 more minutes than Iowa did. But I always say this: Iowa's defense was so stout yesterday. They held Wisconsin to 57 yards rushing. Iowa went for 100 and some. Now Goodson had the long run, but
yeah, he had what, the 80 yard run.
He had the 80 yard run.
It makes that score and rushing yardage, yeah, versus time of possession ratio a little skewed.
But it just shows you the fine line of being considered good and be considered great. Iowa lost two games this season, first two games of the year, by a total of 5 points. Lost by 4 to Purdue, lost by 1 to Northwestern. I mean,
you think they they would. Can you? How much would Iowa like to have either one and probably both those games?
You know why? Because they're better than both of those teams, Rob.
They are. They are a better team. And the sad thing is most people look at Northwestern and say, yeah, they are easily the best team in the West Division, and they're not. That's the frustrating thing, I think, when you look at Iowa. It kind of makes sense. New quarterback, sophomore, kind of getting their footing a little bit. You've lost some really good talent the last couple of years. Man, it took them a couple weeks to gel, but, man, once they did, Iowa's been playing some very good football the last few
weeks. They go north and south, and they have an identity, right? They don't try to be anything they're not.
Well, and they keep churning out NFL guys. I mean,
there's like you know, there's like 30 Iowa players in the NFL right now?
There is, which I know from having family who got recruited at least a little bit by Iowa. I've talked about this stat before, but it's something like if you become a full-time starting football player at the University of Iowa, it's like an 8 in 10 chance you'll at least make an NFL team. You may not stick. You may play 3 games, get cut, and never play again. But it's almost an 80% chance you'll make an NFL team at some point. I mean, it's an obscene statistic.
Do you think it drives the Nebraska fans nuts that right now Iowa State is on the verge of being like an elite team in college football? Matt Campbell's done a great job. And we talk about close, you know, stupid losses. If they don't lose to Louisiana 31-17.
We're talking playoff.
You're talking playoff about Iowa State.
They got the one loss to Okie State, which is a ranked team. Or at least they were going into yesterday. I didn't see what Oklahoma State did yesterday.
Oh, they won big. They beat Baylor big.
Okay. I kind of went into a hole there after the Nebraska game. I didn't pay attention to anything after that. I think with Iowa State, there's a little bit of out of sight, out of mind there for Nebraska fans. One, because it's a different conference.
Yeah.
Two, you know, they were like K-State, but kind of friendly, so you were always okay with them.
That makes sense.
I mean, it's just you never had that animosity against Iowa State. We hate the fact that we lost him in 92, but it's not like there's ever been an animosity between Nebraska and Iowa State. And I think a lot of it just goes back to just the way Bill Schneider did things. It kind of had sort of that, I was going to say quiet arrogance, but I've met Bill Schneider, and he's not an arrogant guy at all. He just does what he does, and I think it just kind of drove Nebraska fans nuts. But
it drove them nuts because they're a lot alike, right? I mean, Tom Osborne.
Yeah, the thing with Kansas State is their fans were freaking assholes.
That's what bothered you more.
Just assholes about it. I mean, it was all of a sudden. Even when it's like Chad May hit the door there in what, like 91, 92, and taught the K-State fans how to be an asshole. and it just stuck.
There's some truth to that.
And I look at Iowa State, that I think of Iowa State fans, and all I can think is, screw it. I'll buy the Bush Light and go drink with you. It's like I look at Iowa State fans and it's like, man, there's people I could drink beer with. I like them. They're friendly. They're nice. They want to see a good. They love good sports. They love good football. They're kind of okay with the fact that they've been okay with a couple of really good spots throughout history. They're in a great spot right now. But I've always liked Iowa State. I've always liked Iowa State fans. I mean, it's Kansas State, you know, fuck them. I just, they're dickheads. I love Bill Schneider, great coach, great guy. tons of respect. I appreciate what they've done. I think Chris Kleiman's an excellent coach. I think they're going to do well there long term. Screw them, though. I don't want it. It's K-State. Screw them. Iowa State. It's almost like with Iowa State, it's almost like Nebraska fans are sitting there going, good for them. I think Nebraska fans probably are rooting for Iowa State. I don't think we're upset by it. I think we're rooting for them.
No, but it shows you how fast. I mean, you know, Matt Campbell's a system guy. He comes in with a certain culture, expects certain things, and he hasn't wavered from it. And it's just
guess what Iowa State does really well right now.
Everything.
Runs the ball.
True. Breece Hall, man. If you don't know who Breece – you know the sad thing about that? So did you know who Breece Hall's stepfather is? It's Jeff Smith.
Yeah, that's right.
Breece
yeah.
Hall lived in Omaha before him and his mom moved to Wichita. Hunter Salas at Millard North is like his cousin. And it's amazing that Nebraska didn't get in on this guy. Iowa State was the first one to find him. He stuck with him. And Breece Hall, man, is a player. That dude is a player, big time.
The kid is a heck of a football player, which, I look at some of the recruiting Nebraska's doing, and again, we're kind of going after the 4 and 5 star guys, and we're not going after players.
You know what Breece Hall is for Iowa State? He's an every down 25 to 30 carry a game guy. And that's what you need, north to south.
But here's the other thing, too. They'll give him the ball 20 times, 20-plus times a game, and let him do that.
Yeah.
And right now, I mean, like I said, I think Mills is he's an above-average back. Do I think he's a first-team all-conference guy? No, absolutely not. Do I think he's above average? Yeah. Do I think we ought to be giving him the ball 20 carries a game? Yeah, I really do think we should, because I think that's how you establish a running game. And I think if Nebraska had done that on Saturday, we would have beat Minnesota. But, I mean, the fact that they're giving Hall the ball 20-plus times a game makes a huge difference. It makes Hall look good. It makes Iowa State look good.
One last thing. I know a lot of Nebraska fans were thinking that Mackenzie Melton, who was Scott Frost's quarterback. Yeah, he's going to Florida State. So your daughter can now watch Mackenzie Melton play football for the Seminoles. He's not coming to Nebraska.
Yeah, let's see how that goes. That one kind of surprised. That one really surprised me, quite frankly.
You keep going, as a doctor, you saw the injury he had. That's a pretty big risk, God. Right? I mean, if you're somebody right now, you're like, God, do I take a chance on that?
That leg was messed up. Now, I'm not denying the fact you can get to the point where you can safely play again. You can. Look at Alex Smith with the Redskins. And Alex Smith has been playing well. I mean, he's been playing some very good football. I'm an NFC East guy, which is from an NFL standpoint, that's like an exercise in self-induced pain. I mean, that's just self-punishment there. But Alex Smith has been playing very good football over the last few weeks. And that was essentially the exact same type of injury that Mackenzie Melton had. Both those guys nearly had their lower legs amputated, had to have their lower legs amputated. And that is not, I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I mean, that was a potential on the docket for those guys with that type of injury. The fact that Melton is back to a point where he could potentially play football again is mind-blowing to me. Keep in mind, that injury was, what, the 2018 season?
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago. So we're 2 years out from the point where he is able to say, okay, I can play football again, give me a shot. And the fact of the matter is, he was so limited by that injury, he can't get back the starting job at Central Florida. He's not transferring because he's the starter at Central Florida and wants to see how he does somewhere else. He's looking for a starting job. He's looking for a chance to play. I don't know what they told him at Florida State that convinced him, I've got a chance to start here. And maybe it was just the fact that, hey, it's close enough to where I'm at in Orlando. I'll just drive up to Tallahassee and play there. But whatever it is, apparently he feels like he's got a legitimate chance of starting there. I just, when you can't bust into the starting lineup at Central Florida, I question if he's going to be able to do it at Florida State. That's just my two cents. I thought he was going to end up at, you know what, go find a Sun Belt team whose top two quarterbacks are both seniors this year and are definitely going to move on after this season. That's what I thought I was going to see, a 1AA school somewhere where he'd be able to go out, put up, potentially get a starting spot, put up a bunch of numbers, have a really nice senior season. I mean, he's not an NFL guy at quarterback. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean when I say that. The guy could throw the ball. He definitely has an arm. But, I mean, how many 6'1", 6'2", running quarterbacks who can no longer run does the NFL want? So it's not an NFL thing. The guy can throw the ball, but like I said, he's not your classic drop-back pocket passing quarterback. With that kind of injury, I don't see him remotely having the mobility he had that made him so dangerous at Central Florida and Frost's offense either. So it'll be interesting to see how he does.
Always good stuff, Dr. Rob. Of course, as the holidays approach, we'd like you to consider patronizing our wonderful sponsors, including the Remington Trophy and the Boomer Esiason Foundation. It's been a tough year on these nonprofits. If you have, a donation you can give, please consider the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Infusion Brewing Company beer, it's always a good time to drink beer. And you know what? Give a 6-pack. Give a 12-pack to put under the tree. Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com. If you want to give 2021 Nebraska season tickets, Chad and Jessica over at Ticket Express are ready to fill your stocking during the holidays. And, of course, our good buddy Scott Strunk over at Husker Hounds. He does such a wonderful job. His three stores. Rob is, like, fully clothed with Husker Hounds gear, aren't you? Aren't you?
Dude, I he's got actually really good stuff. I do get all my Husker stuff from Scotty. And it is awesome.
And I'm telling you, his inventory is incredible. And if you're looking for something, I'm willing to bet Scott could probably find it for you. If you don't follow,
he'll get you whatever you want. I mean, you need your Iowa gear, he'll sell you.
Yes,
Iowa
he does.
Gear.
Yes, he does.
It hurts him. He's always got Creighton in stock. Get your Creighton Blue Jays gear. They're lighting up everybody right now. Should have beat your KU boys.
Well, I'm not a KU guy anymore because, my son doesn't go to school there anymore, so I'm no longer on the KU bandwagon.
Dude.
Yeah, sorry, I'm off. My money doesn't go there anymore. I'm no longer a fan. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports, at DocTalkSports. And, of course, if you have an email for Dr. Rob, just send it to DocTalkSports@gmail.com. Nebraska plays Rutgers on Friday. We'll be back again next week with another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.